across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
Where are the decisions from Stormont? Where are they? So, John Boucher, the chief constable, he's asked for more money. Answer from Stormont, they're talking about it. Programme for government, they're talking about it. Winter fuel payments. England, Scotland and Wales have made decisions. They say they've got to make those decisions in order to find money to pay for public sector pay increases. That's what they're saying. What is the decision over winter fuel payments here in Northern Ireland so that pensioners have notice? Are they getting the 100 to 300 quid? Well, if you're on pension credit, yeah, you are. If you're not, what way is it going to go? Guess what? The only place in the UK where there's not a decision made, where the pensioners haven't been told, Northern Ireland. What is Stormont about if it's not about making decisions? So when are they going to come for the winter fuel payments? All coming up this morning. Oh, and me wearing a wee denim jacket, a wee white denim jacket. Last time I had one, I was a wee man, probably 17, 18. Midlife crisis, wearing another one. The punters pay me as much respect as I deserve when they called about that. All coming up in today's programme. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. Thank you for joining us on the biggest show in the country. We had the latest rage hours out, the listening figures. We're once again the biggest show the country. So thank you very much indeed for listening to us, for supporting us. If you've got a story, nolan@bbc.co.uk is how to get in touch with us. Stormont still hasn't made decisions, so there can be a programme for government here. They are still thinking about what to do about the policing budget. No decision from Stormont about the extra money Boucher, the chief constable, says he desperately needs. And now they have another situation where they can be indecisive or make a decision. But it's a big decision that they're going to have to ultimately make. A decision that has already been taken in England. The administration in Scotland has taken it. The administration in Wales has taken it. But not here, of course, in Northern Ireland. Winter fuel payments. Are they going to follow England, Scotland and Wales and scrap winter fuel payments for all pensioners? In other words, it would be means tested. Should they do that or should they not? Why haven't they made the decision so far? Where are they? Where are these decision-making bodies within Stormont? It's called the executive. Anne Watson, member of the Older People's Parliament. Morning to you, Anne.
Morning.
What we're going to do today is make sure that there is a debate in this country about this, given the fact the politicians haven't decided what to do yet. Should winter fuel payments, like they are in England, Scotland and Wales, Anne, be means-tested here?
No, they shouldn't. But then we're the easy target. And it's not so easy for the ones at Stormont to suddenly say they're going to do it with us, considering they got full pay for 2 years, and turn around and say, oh no, we'll kick the pensioners now and get some money off them.
Well, you use this term, kick the pensioners. They would only be kicking the pensioners who can afford it, would they not? It's means tested.
No. Well, means tested means anybody that's on pension credit. And anybody's on pension credit's only on it because they need it. They're not on it to do jollies. They're on it to pay for their heating, pay for their food. And I have seen people, older people, bringing a packed lunch to the Abbey Centre and staying half a day in the Abbey Centre, walking round, having a wee chat with people and sitting down and eating a small packed lunch because they can't afford to heat their houses. Many people are going to do that if they take the money away from them.
But how this is working now in England, Scotland and Wales is the determinant as to whether you get winter fuel payments. Up until now, it's been given to all pensioners. It's a payment of between £100 and £300, isn't it, a year?
What
they're now doing across the water, England, Scotland and Wales, they're using whether a pensioner's getting pension credit as the pointer to whether pensioners actually need it or not. For those people not on pension credit, they won't get the winter fuel allowance.
That's right. But there's a lot, of older people. Now, these are the older people still have the, it in their head that applying for pension credit, they're getting something they're not entitled to. And the majority of older people have worked all their days, paid their stamps and paid their taxes. But that's not taken into consideration. And they don't offer it to them. They have to go and fill in multiple forms. And they're not good at that.
But Anne, is it not the reality? Look, it is not a pot. We've got a huge cohort of listeners who are pensioners to this program, as well as all different age groups. So I'm not going to win any popularity contest with this question that I'm about to ask you. But are the days not gone where, because you can see how strained our budget is in Northern Ireland, we've got the Chief Constable, for goodness sake, saying that he's been abandoned by Stormont and that the policing, he's not going to be able to provide safe policing. We've got him saying that. We've got people sitting on waiting lists in Northern Ireland for years and years. Some people sitting on long waiting lists for cancer, for goodness sake, and other treatments. We've got schools, the infrastructure around schools, the books for children, not enough money. In all of that, can you really say we want every pensioner to continue to get this 100 to 300 quid, whether they need it or not?
Well, my understanding was that Labour decided that they needed to do this because they found this big black hole with thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds missing. They didn't say they were going to do the roads, they were going to do the health, they were going to do the schools. That isn't what they're going to use it for. They're going to use it to fill this hole. And don't tell me that before they come round and told everybody, vote Labour, will you see what we'll do for you? We'll do brilliant things for you. And the first thing they done was kick the pensioners.
But that's a red herring.
Didn't say they would use it for any of the things that you just went through.
That's a red herring, because ultimately it's going to be these local ministers in Northern Ireland making the decision. So there's this thing called parity. And essentially now that England, Scotland and Wales are going to means test these payments, if the executive decides to protect all of you and pensioners, then there will be less money in Northern Ireland for other services.
Yes, I don't doubt that for a moment. But I can also tell you, you see, if they keep on the way they're going, they think of problems with the health situation now. You ain't seen nothing yet. Because the older people are very good at trying to get themselves out and help themselves to the best of their ability.
I am not talking here about older people who are struggling. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the older people who they've worked all of their lives, they've earned money. They're heading up once or twice, once every couple of years probably, and buying a new BMW, buying a new Mercedes because they want to enjoy their retirement. I'm talking about the older pensioners who are heading off to Spain, France, Portugal, 1 week every month because that's how they want to enjoy their retirement. They're getting thrown 100 to 300 quid by the executive because they're not being means tested.
Well, I'm not one of those, and I can tell you that I don't mind if they don't get it. And if they want the means test from the top down, but they don't do that. They means test from the bottom up. The poorest people go first, and it's not until they get a long way up, and very often don't even bother with that, because they're not going to notice it. They're not getting it, so they're not making a fuss. It's the people who aren't needed that are the ones that are going to make a fuss.
Stay there, Anne. Jason Coleraine, first call of the day. Morning, Jason.
Hello, Stephen. The point I want to make, of course, they want referral payment, but there's no executive actually working at the minute, so they're not to make the decision.
They're not making decisions, but they are working.
If England, Wales and Scotland can make a decision, why can Northern Ireland not?
That's the question.
Yep. So why are they not doing it? If they make that decision now, older people might be able to save money for the want or known they're not getting it, or they might be getting it. And that's the point I'm making. There is no decisions being made in this country.
Well, there's if you take a If you take a look at what has happened in Scotland, the Social Justice Secretary, not only has the decision been made, the politicians are issuing statements about why they've made it. So the Social Justice Secretary for Scotland, Shirley Ann Somerville, said she had no choice after the Chancellor announced cuts south of the border. This comes as Scotland's Finance Secretary ordered ministers to constrain all but essential spending to help pay for public sector pay deals.
Yes,
so so they're talking about in Scotland, decision made in England and Wales, we have public sector pay deals here, and Stormont have not. It's yet again, no decision over policing, no decisions to produce a programme for government, no decision over the winter fuel payment.
And that's the point I'm trying to make. They were off for 3.5 years, and all they talked about was getting back and getting that sorted, and there's nothing being done. There's nothing being done. This country is in a crisis, a public sector crisis, and the executive is doing nothing about it.
Maverick in Randallstown. Morning, Maverick.
Hello, how are you?
Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm going back. When I was working, if I had no work, I had to go to the brew. And I got a franc on for my pension. Right? Now, these guys were offered 2 years, and you get this. Where else would you get a job like that? And then when they go on the pension, they have an extra pension because they're MLA. Is that fair?
Well, look, the purpose of this program today is not to invite people to demonise politicians.
No, I'm not.
They are hardworking people. But where are the decisions? That's what we're asking.
Put them out in the billing jet for a couple of months.
Now, Maverick, how old are you?
78.
Do you think all pensioners, because many of them will have worked all their lives, do you think all pensioners should get the winter fuel payment?
Not all. There's some of them don't need it. But there's so many need it. It's that simple. I'm okay the way I am, thank God, but I know people are 10 times worse off than I am, you know.
Maverick, thank you very much. Matthew Robinson from the Northern Ireland Conservatives with us. Morning to you, Matthew.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Commentator, former SPAD, Brendan Mulgrew. Morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Stephen.
So, Matthew, you think all pensioners should get this payment. Why?
Yes, and this is something the former Conservative government warned about going into the last election. We warned the country that Labour were going to squeeze the middle, and they're starting quite cruelly with pensioners. This is going to affect about 10 million pensioners in England, and the reality of devolution is that there's knock-on effects where it's coming in now in Scotland, in Wales, and likelihood is when a decision is taken in Northern Ireland that the same pensioners will probably be axed in Northern Ireland. The Labour Party have made a conscious decision to prioritise very generous pay awards for certain people in the public sector on the back of pensioners that have worked their entire lives, and all they expect is a little bit back from their government in retirement and stay warm in the winter.
You say, and this is why, as a public function, this programme is trying to get some type of clarity as to where the different political parties are on this matter in Northern Ireland. You've said, Matthew, your presumption is Northern Ireland will follow suit, right? But if you look at what the Communities Minister has said, here's what we've got, the Nolan Show has got from his department. The Chancellor's decision to restrict the winter fuel payment to those on pension credit and other means-tested benefits only is disappointing news, which will create an additional financial burden for those senior citizens who are less well off. I will be discussing this matter with my executive colleagues as a matter of urgency, right? So, if it is the DUP's position, which it is, this is their minister saying this, that restricting winter fuel payments to those on pension credit is disappointing and will create an additional financial burden, how's the DUP going to support it? How could the DUP support any motion to means test winter fuel payments in Northern Ireland? And then the implications of that, Matthew, where are they getting the money from to not do it?
Well, that's a question. I've no clue where the Northern Ireland executive is going to find this money. The Treasury's decision in London, I think, has arguably boxed in the Northern Ireland executive. No one wants to make this decision. But quite cynically, I think when it comes to alienating parts of the electorate, pensioners are an easy demographic. I think that the parties are going to make that calculation on the back of. This is a cruel decision on the part of the central UK government, something that was never discussed by the Labour Party in the campaign. And furthermore, back in May, it was the then leader of the opposition, Keir Starmer, that challenged Rishi Sunak, Prime Minister at the time, to commit to not doing the very thing that the Labour Party have just done and axing payments for over 10 million pensioners in England. This is the most cynical and cruel aspect of politics. And this,
Let me bring Brendan in.
I hope the Northern Ireland executive find the money, but I'm sceptical that they will.
Brendan?
Stephen, it's just... I think we need to take the emotion out of the debate and just look at the facts. There are about 300,000 pensioners in Northern Ireland, 60,000 of whom currently get pension credit. There are about another number who don't claim it but are probably entitled to it. Those people will continue to get support for winter fuel, and they deserve it, and they need it. And Anne described people sitting in shopping centres to stay warm. They all need support. Matthew, I think, is being cynical. He's using the fact that the Labour government have brought this measure in very quickly after being elected. Your show, Stephen, for this last week, and I've tuned in most days, has run stories about schools running deficit. This morning we heard there's no money for a late-night bus service. We know the pressure on social housing. The police say they've been abandoned by Stormont because there's a lack of money. We know the issues facing the health service. If we were to maintain this money, this winter fuel payment, for all of our pensioners, that would cost around about £70 million a year. So at a time when our executive is under pressure to raise additional funds or to find savings elsewhere, to suddenly have to find...
Where'd you get that figure from, 70 million?
Well, I read that at the time when this I think I read Newton Emerson writing that was the figure when this measure was announced. Because it's a very crude calculation, Stephen. If we've got 300,000 pensioners and 60,000 of them are on pension credit, 240,000 aren't. And if you multiply that by 250 quid, halfway between 200 and 300, it's around about £70 million our executive would have to find. It is absolutely unrealistic. And frankly, it's socially unjust to give people a couple of £100 a year for winter fuel when we know there are people out there, pensioners, who simply don't need it. Stephen, there are people for whom £100 is a couple of rounds of drink in a golf club. They do not need the money to heat their homes, and they shouldn't get it. The
argument against that is possibly a good thing for any society to do, if you work all your life, to do more than the bare minimum you need to for people that have contributed to this community all their lives.
It is a good thing, Stephen. You know what else is a good thing? To give pensioners that need hip replacements. If I was a pensioner, I shouldn't have the prospect of receiving NHS care, being more realistic than somebody else getting £100 for winter fuel when they don't need it. That's the point. It's not. We used to have these phrases targeting social need, you know, putting money where into communities where it was most needed. Giving blanket across the board money to pensioners, no matter how well off or otherwise they are, that's not part of the social need. That's not the right use of public funds.
Well, the reality of means testing, it means that an AGK have said this. Countless people in the middle are going to fall through the cracks. That's what's going to happen, and you're going to and these are not people that can afford generous rounds of drinks in the golf club or multi holidays during the year. These are hardworking pensioners in the middle that are just trying to get by and enjoy their retirement. This payment was everything to many of our pensioners in Northern Ireland during the cold and wet winter months. People will fall through the cracks, and that is a little concern to this Labour government. And I get that funding is stretched, but my view has always been those that have worked their entire lives should be respected and supported. in retirement. I think we should support and respect those most the elderly in society. It's always a principle that I've held, and I think it should be prioritized. But I'm skeptical that Stormont will find this money, and certainly the Treasury is not.
Where is Stormont in this decision? So what? Where is the decision? What does Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little-Pinkelly and Naomi Long and Doug Beattie, what is their view on this collectively? Have they sat down? Are they anywhere close to making a decision? It's a government in Northern Ireland, for goodness sake.
Stormont has a track record for dodging difficult decisions, but the Labour Party and the Labour government have forced this. And I've said this before. Those parties, like Alliance, SDLP, Sinn Féin, that supported and cheerled this Labour government into office, should in part own this reality. If we still had a Conservative government to this day, the Northern Ireland executive would not be boxed into the situation they are as it relates to winter fuel payments. This is a direct consequence of the very government that they supported into office. That's the political and legislative reality of the situation.
Gerard's in Kilkeel. Morning, Gerard.
Yeah, morning, Stephen. Firstly, I think Matthew Robinson's talking absolute nonsense about people falling through the cracks. Get to the facts, and you should be putting the facts out, Stephen. If you have £9,999 in the bank, you're entitled to pension credits. If you're over that limit, for every 500, they take a pound off, they consider it a pound. So every 1,000 over 10,000 is £2. So you potentially, and there's no upper limit, so you potentially could have £50,000 in the bank and still have small entitlement to pension credits. So it should be means tested. It's absolutely diabolical that it shouldn't be means tested.
The other thing is this. This kicks in across the water this year. So like for the winter fuel payment, I don't know when it's presumably received in the winter. The clue's in the title. But Anne Watson, you're a member of the Older People's Parliament.
Yes, that's right.
How much notice is the executive going to give pensioners that they're not getting this money if the executive have not declared their decision like in as speedy a way as they have across the water? Is that in their minds? That if they're going to do this, they need to give pensioners as much notice as possible?
Yeah. But it could be that they're embarrassed because considering their track record and the fact that the people here actually didn't know who to vote for because they've been so disillusioned with all the different things that have happened that nobody knew about.
They promised
in the background.
Every one of those parties now in the executive promised all of you to let them back in. Promised all of you that they would represent you taking decisions, promised all of you of the big advantages of government. So even a most an important, a complicated, but it is a straight answer, yes or no, in terms of what the executive's got to decide, they haven't made the decision. Why not?
They don't make decisions about anything, sure. Look at the state of the roads. Look at the state of the schools. Look at the state. They don't try to help anything. But during the time they were off, not only were they off and got paid, but they got a pay raise. Now, how ridiculous is that? Couldn't happen anywhere else over here. There's nowhere else would put up with it. And we stand by and let them do it. But if they take that away, and then another thing I got on my phone the other day was bus passes, ? And that's another threat.
Who's doing that? Are they consulting over that or what?
I got a message on my phone. Possibility the bus passes might be nixed. And I thought, yeah, that's another threat.
I'm not across where government are at with bus passes. I should be. I'm not. Sorry, Brendan.
Well,
go ahead.
I'm telling you, you see, if they take that away as well, they will be. Inundated with older people being sick because they'll be sitting in the house feeling sorry for themselves and suddenly have all sorts of different things
wrong. I think they've already decided not to get rid of bus passes.
That's right. That's what's happened.
Well, yes,
hold on, Anne. Go ahead, Brendan.
The consultation is finished, and the minister announced that the bus class will remain for anyone aged over 60, but that there might be an annual administrative fee. That was the primary reason.
That's right.
And Stephen, it was heralded as a big, you know, it was a virtuous move, and we're protecting the old people's bus pass. That's fine, but I made this point to you before. If I'm 59 years old, going to work on a bus every day and I'm paying £2.20, on the day of my 60th birthday, I'm still going to work, still earning the same money, but suddenly I'm getting a free bus. It's another example of not targeting social need and not putting resources where they're needed. The point has been made about people who fall through the cracks or don't claim pension credits when they could. You know, there's good organisations out there, you know, Advice Base, I've heard them talking about, come and talk to us and we'll make sure you get your pension credit. So that should be happening, and older people should be encouraged to apply for pension credits if they're eligible and they don't get it. But and you're quite right. The lack of a decision from Stormont here is very disappointing. People need to be able to plan for what they're going to be receive or not this winter.
Is it a lack of understanding within Sinn Féin, the DUP, the Alliance Party, the Ulster Unionist Party, about the difference that a couple of hundred quid can actually make to people when they're deciding whether to turn the heat on or not, in terms of giving them notice as to what the decision is going to be? Is there any urgency within Stormont to tell the people where they're at with this? Dora in Newton Abbey. Good morning, Dora.
Hello there.
Good morning. You're a pensioner, Dora.
Well, we're pensioners, yes, and we get no extra help. We've both got occupational pensions. But that heating money, as soon as we get it, it goes into the account that pays the gas and the electricity, and we know that the account is then getting enough money for those cold weeks round about Christmas. But my sister lives in the Republic, and her husband worked all their lives, and they have an occupational pension. They have no benefits, but their state pension alone for the two of them comes to more than £500 a week. And I think it's 3 weeks before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas, every pensioner in the Republic gets double pension. So that means that week that's paid out, they get over £1,000 in state pension. That's no benefits, that's just the state pension. And we get nothing, absolutely nothing. So, we get the £10 Christmas bonus, and that's supposed to be. Meanwhile, all the people who get the money for the cash for ash, they're sitting quite warm and comfortable.
Well,
I'm
not sure the people that got the RHI payments, that's what you're referring to, are sitting comfortable because they've had the payments that they thought they were going to get significantly reduced, actually.
They're still getting something, and the pensioners are getting nothing.
So what do you say to Stormont this morning?
Well, I think they should pull a finger out and make a decision and tell us, even if they paid every pensioner £100, get every pensioner the same throughout. But just to keep us hanging on. And people depend on that. A lot of people depend on that money.
Well, Boucher, the Chief Constable, is hanging on. They put out some type of holding statement to say they were talking about the Chief Constable's plea for more funding. He is literally saying they will not be able to police certain functions safely without additional funding. If the riots were protracted, they will not be able to provide policing to do that. They do not have the money. So there's been no decision. I don't know, Brenda Mulgrew, you're a former special advisor. Could there companies have away days? Could Stormont actually sit down, block out a day, and make a number of decisions in a day over over these decisions? Why couldn't they?
Well, actually, Stephen, you might be surprised to learn that the executive, as a group of ministers, have had multiple away days going back to the time when devolution was first restored in order to try and agree what are our set of priorities here, what's our approach to government, what's our programme for government content going to be. So it wouldn't be unusual for our executive to have an away day, and literally to go.
Where do they have those?
Well, some of them are called away days, even though they happen in the grounds of Stormont. well, some of them happen in, you know, maybe a hotel or a conference center within Northern Ireland. They're not sort of five-star hotels overnight or anything like that. But there's no doubt, you make a valid point. There are a number of very pressing decisions, very pressing issues facing the executive. Everyone's out on summer holiday. Ministers, some of them are here. We hear statements from them, but some of them are clearly away on leave and holiday. That's fine. But very soon, upon their return, they need to get out of photo-op mode and into decision-making mode. And some of those decisions are going to be hard ones to make because there are going to have to be priorities identified, money allocated to those priorities, and some people are going to lose out. But that's the reality of government.
And what we're asking today, should the pensioners lose out for those who can afford to pay? I don't think there's anybody suggesting that pensioners who are struggling to eat and heat should be targeted. The question that we're asking this morning is if those pensioners who can afford to pay, who are very well off, Matthew Robinson wants them to continue to get the few hundred quid. And that's the debate this morning. Matthew, thank you. Brendan, thank you. Anne, thank you. Dora, thank you. 0303 80 55 55. 25 to 10, The Nolan Show from the BBC. Here's the news. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. 0303 80 55 55 is the number to call this morning. Paul Given was speaking on The Nolan Show yesterday, the Education Minister. I think he then went back on to Evening Extra last night. Let's hear what he had to say about spending money.
I have outlined to the executive the financial pressures within our schools and the outworking of the pay increase and what that should mean in terms of an uplift within schools' budgets. And I have been taking some decisions around that, and that information will be communicated to schools because I think it is unfair to, on the one hand, increase teachers' pay, but not then provide the funding to reflect that within a school's budget. And therefore, I am taking decisions to address that particular issue, and schools will be provided with a new amount of funding allocated to each school to reflect the changes that came about through teachers' salaries. But I also need to be very clear that the Department of Education, which I have outlined a number of months ago, is on a projected overspend of hundreds of millions of pounds. That is a pressure that is going to crystallise within an executive-wide level. And you know, the cuts that would be required in order to bring that level of saving into the education system would devastate our system, and I'm not prepared to do that.
That's significant. There's the education minister warning the executive. He's in the executive. He's the executive minister in it. So what Given is essentially saying, Mr. Given, Paul Given, whatever you want to call him, what Paul is saying is that he is not prepared to make the cuts in the education department that would balance his budget. He's spending the money anyway, and he's flagging this up to the executive. So that means the executive needs to sit down. And Mike Nesbitt has said similar things, the health minister, about what he's not prepared to cut. John Boucher, the chief constable, is saying that he's overspending because he's no other choice. Where is the executive meeting, the urgency? Where are they sitting down around a table and working this out on our behalf? Are they going to put their fingers in their ears like children and go, blah, 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 blah? Are they going to actually sort it? Where's the programme for government? Michelle O'Neill, Emma Little-Pengelly in the executive office. You are our first and deputy first ministers. Are you driving how this is going to be sorted? Are you calling together the executive in an urgent fashion? All of these people saying they have no choice but to overspend. Might you all come up collectively with decisions which might actually revenue raise? We're introducing, and it won't be popular, we're introducing a debate this morning as to whether Northern Ireland should follow England, Scotland and Wales with winter fuel payments. I'm constantly raising, can we afford not to bring in water rates? I've got a big house. I don't want my rates to go up. I'm constantly raising in this programme whether rates should be capped for people with big houses in Northern Ireland. Are any of you sitting down together as our executive and working this out? And if not, why not? 0-30-30-80-55-55. We'll come back to this. Lots of you calling. I want to look at monkeypox. There's a new name for it, mpox. And the World Health Organization has declared mpox as a global health emergency. It has killed people in Africa. It's now been detected in Europe. I know that the Swedish Public Health Agency has confirmed, it's confirmed the first case of mpox. Professor Michael Marks is from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us about this. What's different, first of all, so I understand, between monkeypox and mpox?
Yes, that's just a change in the name. It's the same virus. In fact, the virus isn't spread by monkeys. It never was. It was just first described in monkeys. And so that's where the name comes from. And it was changed to mpox because really they're not important in this infection.
Okay. And so mpox, this is where you get all these warts all over your body, is it?
Yeah, so this is a virus that's related. It's from the same family as the virus that used to cause smallpox. Smallpox was eradicated from the world in the 1970s, but mpox is a similar virus. And there are really two main families of the virus, one which predominantly circulates in West Africa, and that caused the big global outbreak that people may remember in 2022, and a separate strain which predominantly circulates in Central Africa, and which is the cause of the major outbreak going on now in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the surrounding countries.
And obviously the reason why the World Health Organization is worried about this, and they have said they're worried about it, is we see viruses start off in one part of the world and then spread. And we saw that with COVID, for example. So is this a highly contagious virus?
So most transmission occurs from direct skin-to-skin contact. So you come into contact with the rash on someone's body. There almost certainly is some transmission through respiratory spread, but really skin-to-skin contact is the main mechanism. And that's what we're seeing in Central Africa, that it is spreading rapidly through individuals living in very cramped and overcrowded positions. That is causing transmission outside of the Democratic Republic of Congo to neighbouring countries. And of course, once you start having 10, 15, 20,000 cases of something, the chance that some cases will be exported out of the region, as we've seen with the case in Sweden, is there. The likelihood that there'll be a global pandemic like there was with COVID is vanishingly small, but it is quite likely that we will continue to see small numbers of cases reported outside of Central Africa.
And here we have this case in Sweden. Sweden now declaring a case there.
Yes. So as I say, you know, in 2022, there were many, many cases of the other main strain of mpox, which must have originally arisen from West Africa, but there was transmission into populations outside of West Africa and then onward. The vast majority of cases, you know, there are almost 20,000 cases reported in the current outbreak, of which one has been reported in Sweden. And really, all of the cases and all of the deaths and all of the problems are in Central Africa, around the DRC and its neighbouring countries.
If it's by skin contact, obviously we touch people a lot, we shake hands a lot, we hug our friends, can it be incidental contact, like if you're in a shop when you're placing coins in someone's hand? Or does it need to be strong contact?
So
prolonged.
Yeah, so this is, you don't transmit through your skin without a rash. So there aren't people walking around with completely normal skin, shaking hands with each other, causing transmission to that. Transmission occurs when an unwell person who has a rash on their body comes into close physical contact with someone else, and there's a break in that person's skin or in a membrane like the lips, and they come into contact with that rash. So you're not getting this by, you know, shaking hands with a healthy looking individual. It's spreading because there are many unwell people who have the rash, and they are not able to isolate or completely avoid contact with other individuals.
And is that why then you are less worried about it spreading here?
So I think that's correct. You know, things that spread predominantly spread through the air. So COVID was exclusively really spread through the air. You know, they are obviously more transmissible, considerably more transmissible than Mpox. And Mpox is really heavily spread by individuals who are sick. Whereas during COVID, there were many individuals who had very few symptoms, but were still infectious. Whereas in Mpox, nearly all of the transmission is due to people who are, you know, unwell with an illness.
So why then is the World Health Organization declaring this as a global health emergency?
Well, what we've seen over the last 6 months is that the number of cases and the number of deaths in the Democratic Republic of Congo has gone up, and the world hasn't paid any attention. This is far and away the largest outbreak of this disease, and it's killing about 4%. So that's quite a substantial mortality. And what we are now seeing is transmission out of the Democratic Republic of Congo into, you know, 10, 12, 15 other countries in sub-Saharan Africa. So it's clear that there does need to be a coordinated global response. And obviously, as the epidemic grows, the risk of cases reaching Sweden, Europe, America will go up. The focus is still very much in Central Africa, and it's clear that efforts so far have been insufficient. So a public health emergency of international concern is a mechanism to coordinate responses, trigger funding, and really bring attention to try and control the problem in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Professor Michael Marks, thank you very much indeed. That's really helpful. Thank you. 5555 is the number to call today. It's Friday morning. What date is it? The 16th of August. And as you know, in the Nolan Show, we do the news, we make the news, you make the news, but we also have a laugh together. This might make you smile. So I was in America. It's probably yet another midlife crisis. I have no idea. But I saw this white denim jacket. Last time I had a denim jacket was when I was 14 or 15 going to the boat club. Some of my friends when I was at school. And so I've bought a white denim jacket, and many of my friends are telling me to wise up. It is ridiculous looking. So then I come into the BBC, and the Nolan team start bullying me too. I must put in some complaint somewhere, suggesting that I think I'm in some type of old boy band. I know they're looking at me and they're kind of slightly envious at this white denim jacket. Now, others think that I've lost the plot. When you won't look in a mirror in the light of day, swear you dyed it when your hair turns grey, when you zip up your wranglers and your belly's in the way, you're the oldest swinger in town. That's me, Chris, the oldest swinger in town. Chris Suter with us this morning, the fashionista. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm all right in my little denim white jacket. What do you think?
Stephen, I have to admit, here, do you know what? I think you've been sabotaged and stitched up by your team here, because honestly, looking at it, just taking it at face value, Stephen.
Yes, it's on my Twitter feed now, at Stephen Nolan.
On you, I must admit, Stephen, I really want to rip the back out of you for this. Like, I really do. But I look at the picture of you wearing it with your wee bit of a tan. You've got a wee bit of colour in your
face.
You've got
the hair. I'm thinking myself.
Stephen, I actually don't think it looks that bad on you.
Yes.
Now, however.
I am a sexy man now that I have my white jacket on. I know that when I'm walking through the town, people are thinking, which boy band is he in?
Well, here, the thing is, it asks the question, though, is it right for a 50-year-old man to be wearing a denim jacket? That is another question. I suppose it really comes down to what type of man you are and what type of man you want to be and what type of person you're trying to portray. So, you know, as much as I would love to come on here and literally and say, rip the back of you for wearing this, I think, Stephen, just you do you. And, like, see if you look at the technical aspect behind this. Wearing light colours on top for a guy of your shape and size, Stephen, can actually
you
be
mean
very
my nice shape and size.
Well, you've got to, everybody has their own body shape. Everybody
what
has
are you trying to say? Are you trying to say fat men can't wear a white denim jacket? Yes, you are. It's precisely what you're trying to say.
No, I'm not. I'm actually coming to your saviour here because I'm saying that jacket and the colour actually is quite flattering on you, Stephen Nolan, because it's a lighter colour, and if you pair it up with something maybe slightly darker on the bottom. I notice in the picture you're wearing a light colour pant. I would put you in something white, a little bit darker.
White trousers. I like white trousers. Now, I've made a mistake today because I've got bright red boxers on and white trousers, so I look like something out of a cartoon.
Oh my goodness, that sounds horrific, Stephen. Horrific. But here, let me finish my point. So if you're wearing something dark on the bottom, to the other people that are looking towards you and maybe making passing comments on you, by having that slightly darker colour on the bottom, it actually draws the eye and the peripheral vision downward, which takes the attention away from your neck, away from your belly, away from anywhere that a man of your shape and size and stature might carry an extra little bit of excess weight. And it's actually quite flattering.
Norman and Bangor. Good morning, Norman.
Morning, Stephen. You remind me of a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Trying to be a young man with your white denim jacket. So you do. I bet you bought that in America in Santa Monica.
I did.
I knew that as soon as I seen that. I says, there's Stephen trying to be the typical Yank, be a young man with his denim jacket.
Because here's the interesting thing, right? And I do think this is an interesting talking point. You get to different ages and society has told you what you can't wear anymore. It's not you choosing what you can and can't wear anymore.
It's society saying,
okay, you get to a certain age and you really shouldn't wear, you know, those type of bright colours. You really shouldn't wear trainers. You really shouldn't do this and that and the other.
I wear Skechers. I seen a denim jacket in one of the shops in the Bloomfield.
Yes.
A lovely colour of green. But I said to myself, at my age, should I be wearing that?
See, and there's why this is interesting. Should you just have the confidence, wear what you want? I remember one time, Chris Tudor, and this is a true story. We're going back many, many years ago. When I was slightly less sure of myself. And guess what I allowed to happen, Chris?
What did you allow to happen?
I allowed the BBC to bring in some advisor to dress me, right?
Yes, yes.
I appeared on this particular television programme, it was many years ago, and you couldn't tell the difference between me and Humpty Dumpty. I looked like an egg, dressed up as Humpty Dumpty.
Stephen, maybe this is the point. Maybe here.
I am at the age now where I don't give a damn what anybody thinks, and I saw this wee jacket and I thought, I'm going to wear that.
Stephen, I think the BBC could employ me to come and be your stylist. Me and you'd get on great. I have such good fun with you. I promise I wouldn't make you look like a hunk.
But why can't we all be our own stylists in terms of, not for people that are on telly, that's different, isn't it? I'm talking about anybody listening at the minute, why can't they? But why, if they're 40 or 50 and they want to wear something that conventionally a 20-year-old wears, or the other way around, a 20-year-old wants to wear something a 50, why are we allowing ourselves to be boxed in?
Yeah, I suppose it just comes down to social constructs and social norms and what is like socially acceptable.
But isn't that boring?
It is, and honestly, I say I did want to come on here and rip the back at you for this, but honestly, I think, mate, just you do you. And Stephen, see if you're happy wearing it and you think you look good. I'm kind of with you. Stop everybody else.
Oh, no, I don't think I look good, but I'm happy wearing it.
Stephen, if you're happy wearing it, you must think you look good.
No, I don't think I look good in anything. Everything I put on, it's like a bin bag over my head. I might as well just put a plastic bag on. But I like this jacket, and I bought it,
there you
and
go.
That's it.
I do this every day, mate, and I honestly think it's not that bad. Again, I'm sort of on the fence with that. Once you get to a certain age, you should be wearing a certain style of clothes.
Why? Tell me why.
How that works. Because again, it's what's socially acceptable, what's socially, what's normal. And again, I agree with you. What is normal? What is socially acceptable? It should be within everybody's right to wear whatever they want. But I suppose if you want to fit into society and you want to just be like everybody else, well, then you kind of wear what everybody else wears. But like yourself, if you want to look like something from 1980s Bross, boy band, and look, I'm looking through some of their songs. When Will I Be Famous? Cat Amongst the Pigeons, Chocolate Box. You are like a walking advert for 80s Brock. And you know what? If that's good for you, and you love it. You've even got the haircut. You just need the wee red scarf that Matt Goss wore, cat around your neck. I'm telling you, you do you, Nolan. I'm backing you on there.
I wonder Norman would Crothers lent me one of his cravats.
He might, Stephen, but if you're happy with your denim jacket,
yes.
And if I bought that one that I like that's coloured green, I would wear it no matter what people thought, no matter what age I was. I'm a lot older than you, Stephen. I wear zipped up jackets, so I do.
Yeah.
And nobody says anything to me. So, I dress the way I dressed it 30 years ago.
So,
Can I ask Norman, when you spoke on this before and I've never met it, are you a shirt and tie man? Are you one of the old school, what I would call the old school, the guys, gentlemen would have just dressed? You didn't get out of bed or you didn't go out until you were shirt and tie?
No, the only time I wear a shirt and tie is going to church on a Sunday. The rest of the week I wear T-shirts, the same as what Stephen would wear.
That's
different coloured T-shirts. So
always comfortable. Comfortable.
Yes, comfortable. So it is, comfortable.
Stephen, have you lost a bit of weight? Because I don't know if it's just that white. I'm looking at
this. No, I've lost no weight.
Jacket.
Absolutely no weight.
Well, I'm telling you, and I'm not just saying this to lick you or whatever. I think you look great.
In fact,
it's good on you.
Well, why is the Nolan team behind the scenes mocking me? Why are they doing this? They're laughing out loud every time I walk into the office. I was
Stephen,
told.
I'm not going to tell you who phoned me, but they all phoned me. They all phoned me on this. What do you think? You need this ribbon. And like, you know what, lads? Let me have a look at it. It sounds terrible.
As if I've had some type of crisis.
Yeah, but are you? Tell me this. There's a good solid question. Do you think you're in a midlife crisis?
Here's pot-bellied Brendan.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Chris.
Good morning, Brendan.
Chris, tell us the truth. He looks like the ice cream man. There's no denying it.
I have to admit, honestly, Brendan, I am being serious, I'm being truthful. That every ounce of my body wants to tell him he looks terrible.
What's wrong with it, Brendan?
What's
wrong with it?
He looks like ice cream, man.
It's all right.
No, he looks like he's gonna whip out an ice cream, put a flake on it, and yeah. He looks like someone, Chris, to be honest, he looks like someone you'd find out at the port on a Sunday, to be fair.
With a wee set of brown, dealer bits on.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think any of the other presenters of Radio Ulster would have to put up with this? Can you imagine anybody from the team walking in and challenging, and my goodness, does it need challenged, Crothers' dress? Can you imagine anybody walking in and remarking on Buckler's tops?
No, because they all wear normal clothes.
Or Sarah Brett's.
They all wear normal clothes.
Or Declan Harvey.
But look at me, I'm wearing shorts, normal clothes.
You
wearing shorts.
You don't fit in, Stephen. You see, that we'll go back to one of those Bross songs here, there, Cat
yes.
Amongst the Pigeons. That's
yes.
You. You are the cat amongst the pigeons. And you know what? Maybe you do just need to dress like that.
Anyway,
I think you're being too nice, Chris. You need to just tell him the truth.
I know.
What is the truth? What is the truth? I'm too old for a white denim jacket. Is that what you're saying, Brendan?
My body, Brendan, wants me to tell him, Stephen, you're too old for this and dressed, you know, whatever. But honestly, I actually think he looks all right.
I don't know if it's the age thing or it's just like we're in 2024. It's something you would see in the 80s.
I don't care.
Well, I think you should.
Stuff you.
I don't.
And here, Stephen, I'm already here. This
As
is
my mother
wee,
would say, shove it up your jacksie.
Here, this is another good wee conversation. You don't think life is kind of 10 years on further than it used to be? Like, you know, 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds are now the new 20-year-olds. 40-year-olds are now the new 30-year-olds. Stephen, maybe you're just a new... You're 50 is the new 40.
No, actually, do you know what, Chris? I've seen you wearing some dodgy shoes on social media, so do you know what? You need to be careful too, to be fair.
You can pick me in the elevator.
Enough of this waffle. Norman and I are bored, stupid with this conversation.
Stephen, I'm going to get my breakfast.
You wear what you want. I wear what I want. And what people say, I don't care.
Thank you, Norman.
You do you.
Bye-bye, Norman.
Bye-bye, Stephen.
Bye-bye, Chris.
See you, Nolan.
Good morning, everyone. 030 30 80 55 55 is the number to call this Friday morning, and that's what you're doing. And tweeting me about this white denim jacket that I have purchased. Sarah and Donna Mina. Good morning, Sarah.
Donna Mina.
I'm sorry?
Donna Mina.
Donna Mina.
Donna Mina.
Even your bark, your dog agrees.
That's my dog. Knows I'm telling you the truth.
Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
So what can we, what do we think about my denim jacket? Have you seen it? Have you got Twitter in Donamina?
No. I don't. But Eamon Holmes was on there one morning this week and he wore a white jacket.
Did he?
And I would say he's older than you.
Oh, he's a lot older than me. He's clearly copying me.
And he looked 20 years younger.
Right.
I thought he suited it. I thought he looked well on it.
Well, I'm being mocked and bullied in here.
Well, you're big enough to stand up for yourself.
In the BBC for wearing this jacket?
Yes.
Do you support me, Sarah?
Oh, I support you. They're jealous.
They are. They clearly are.
Probably can't afford what you paid for yours, so they're raging.
You're nothing to do with that other man in Dunamina, John, are you?
No, I hear him on, but I don't know who he is. I don't know his surname, you
I don't think he knows who he is either. So I don't think Chris and Banger agrees with you. Good morning, Chris.
Hello there, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
It's lovely to actually get talking to you. Do you know how many times I've been on your show to your researchers? And I never get on. Your producers must have something against me. They think I'm going to say something nasty on air.
Right, and I believe you're going to say something about me on air that isn't very complimentary. Is that right?
No, actually another thing I must get out of the road.
Oh, for goodness sake, are we talking about this subject?
We are talking about this subject. Now, will you calm down?
Yes.
Oh, please.
My blood pressure tends to.
I can know, but then you get other people's blood pressure up, and then nobody gets anything done.
Hurry up!
There you go again. Right. You worked for, in the West Circular Road, a petrol station, didn't you?
I did.
And that petrol station was in the Maxwell. It's the only one there.
What has this got to do with a white denim jacket?
Because I always wondered where I met you before. Ah. I was one of your supervisors.
What?
Oh, yes. You don't remember, my friend. But I had to get that out.
When I was a boy, working in that petrol station, we didn't have supervisors for a start.
Oh, did you not?
No.
Well, you wouldn't have noticed it because you thought you were the wee's niece then.
So you were working for Maxwell, were you?
I was Mr. Eric McMullen, I was working for him, and a gentleman he was. He was. It was the best job I ever had in my life, was working for McMullen's.
I'll tell you another wee story. Right. It's just interesting how your paths in life take a turn.
Yes.
So I worked in that petrol station. I think I was still at school, so I think from about 15.
Yeah.
And I worked in it for 6 or 7 years. I worked in it for ages, right?
I know, yeah.
And at one stage, I wanted to...
Do you remember Gene Fitzpatrick?
I remember Gene. Was there? Anyway!
He was a comedian.
Oh, yes, sorry. I thought you meant a woman called Gene. Anyway, this is not for Radio Ulster, but wait till you hear my story, which is...
Right.
So okay, I worked in that.
Tell your story.
Yes, it is.
Right, okay, go ahead.
I worked in this petrol station, and I got to the stage where I was 18 or something, around that. And I said to Maxwell, "Will you let me run a station? I want to buy my own station." And Maxwell said yes. And I went to the interview and all, and they said yes. So I was going to be one of the youngest runners of a petrol station. And
it's a pity you didn't get it.
And well, no, they said yes.
then we wouldn't have to be tormented by you every morning at 9 o'clock.
And I then pulled out. And had I have not pulled out, I probably wouldn't be on the radio. I'd probably be running a petrol station.
That's what I just said, my friend.
And making more money. Right.
Can we get on to this white coat business?
Yes.
Good. Right. There's two people you remind me of. Now, I haven't seen you in this white coat, right? And I can't say on air what I would think if I actually saw you.
I see you've written it down.
Oh, did you? Oh, so they actually passed these things on to you.
Oh, I see it's written down. The word starts with D and there's an H in it. And we could play a little countdown word of what you've described me, starting with D.
I gave my word to the producer. Now, Chris, we're looking on air, but as long as you don't say what you said, then I said,
yes.
What do you take me for? I'm a gentleman.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
I can hear that.
I wouldn't say to anybody, unless I was face to face, them, if I was going to call you what you just put out, I would say it to your face, if I was going to say that, right? Now, going back to this white coat, it reminds me, there's two people I've always known to have worn white coats, who were eminent people, shall we say, because you consider yourself to be an eminent person.
Would you cut to the chase?
I am. Now, one was Liberace. Do you remember him? You don't even know him. Right. And the other one was Al Capone.
Right.
He wore a white denim coat or jacket. And he had a coronation. So when's the coronation coming out? To go with your white coat.
Big Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Would you tell this man to shove it up his jacksie, his criticisms of what I wear?
Listen to tell you, Stephen, I haven't seen you in it. I'm sitting in the car here listening to them all, Norman and them all. I'm going to tell you, you just were there.
Thank you.
Because I'm going to tell you, I'm 82 there passing Sunday. And I wear leather gear.
Now, Barbara.
No, I do, Stephen. Ask Connor. Connor's seen me in it.
Well, that's another story.
Well, there you are now. Connor's seen me in it.
When you say you wear leather gear...
Trousers, skirts,
all right, okay.
Jackets of a black leather jacket, of a brown leather jacket, and of a skirt, and of trousers.
Thank goodness it wasn't the leather gear I was thinking of.
No, I know that. I know what you were thinking of, but something to do with.
How did you get it in one?
Oh, I know what you're like, Stephen. I know you too well. And you didn't even wish me happy birthday. I was 82 there on Sunday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'm 50.
But you wear that white coat.
I'm 51.
And I know
on
this month.
Tuesday coming.
This month. I'll maybe if I get time, I'll go down and see you.
That would be lovely.
All right, Stephen, but you tell you something. You
what do you
wear
make
that
your man
jacket.
Here? What do you make your man here?
You see the BBC ones?
Yes.
They're jealous of you because you can work.
Well, they all come in here. Do you know what happens, right? Here's what happens, Barbara. If you remember back to the days of, I think it was Greg Dyke, when he was the Director General.
Uh-huh.
And Greg Dyke stopped wearing a tie. Every one of them in here, within about a week, stopped wearing a tie. There was then another Director General who wore training shoes. Every one of them in here started wearing training shoes.
Uh-huh.
Just be yourself.
Well, sure, there'll be Connor going in his shorts. You know, there's nothing. No, nobody complains about him.
This Nolan team, they come in here like they're dressed to go to the opera.
I've seen some of the teams coming out of there, and I can tell you, there's some of them not very well dressed.
Well.
When I've been down in the BBC.
You should not talk about the view like that.
Well, anyway, darling, you just wear your leather or your white coat.
Yes.
And if you want to wear a white trousers, and as that man said, mind if you get a rose in case the dye comes out of the rose into your coat.
Yes. No, totally. So, I just think I'm too easily mocked in here, aren't I?
Nah, just do work, well, no matter about them. Turn your nose up at them.
Well, there is a slight complication coming my way, Barbara, about my dress sense.
Uh-huh.
I think it'll be early next year, actually,
uh-huh.
when I'm moving into the BBC newsroom.
Yeah.
So how am I required to dress when I'm around your man Buckler and Crawley? And
well, when you go into
what do you call your woman, Brett?
Whenever you go in there, you just watch to see the way they're dressed, and you make yourself a bit better.
Well, I'm not going to compare. How can I compete with them?
Well, if they wear a tie, don't you wear a tie?
So what do you think? Should there be a dress sense in the newsroom?
Yes, I think so.
Right, so I can't...
We tell you, Stephen, you look well on anything. And I haven't seen you in your shorts yet, so I'll be watching it for you.
Thank you, Barbara.
All right, dear.
Thank you, Chris.
For your white jacket.
Thank you, Chris.
That's the best show I've heard yet.
Thank you, sir. Thank you to your licensed repair. Brian and Enniskillen. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen.
You can see me in this jacket, at Stephen Nolan on Twitter.
You're looking great.
Do you think?
You are. I do. And I think, especially with your Californian tan, it always works. But generally speaking, Barbara has nailed it there. Walk the walk and get on with it. If you're any way confident at all, which I think you are much more than you let on.
No.
I think white's a fabulous colour.
I am not
Stephen.
Confident about how I look. Absolutely not.
Well, I think your confidence has grown, I think, to be
honest.
How
am I going to dress when I go into this newsroom? Am I going to have to put on a cravat like Crothers or wee chinos like Buckler? Or,
no.
I don't know, like, how am I going to dress when I go in there?
Well, I think Barbara got you a bit excited over leather, so maybe you'll have to go in a white leather jacket.
I'm sitting here this morning in an old pair of shorts and an old T-shirt that's too tight.
Well, can I give you
a
wee bit
socks.
Of advice?
Would I be allowed into that newsroom dressed like that?
No, you shouldn't be allowed into the BBC dressed like that. You should be good in a nice white shorts, Stephen, and a nice wee navy top on you in this type of weather, regardless of the rain.
Yes.
Just back to the issue on white. I think, including Fermanagh, a lot of Fermanagh people, Belfast people included, a wee bit afraid of the colour white, especially the men. White trousers and nice T-shirts and tops. So stylish for men. You take a look at the Italian man. We're always looking around going, God, why do they look
sometimes
so...
Sometimes do.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you do, Stephen. can I take your temperature when you do that again?
So
white is the new black, Stephen. Get on with it, embrace it. And listen, you're only a young man. I'm 59 this October.
Oh, you're done. You're gone. 59. I'm worried about hitting 51 here next week.
I'll take you for a walk on a Donegal beach any day and we'll see who's breathing heavy. And it'll not be over my outfit. But listen,
yes.
You embrace the white jacket. And sure, listen, you're only here for a short while. Be happy.
I wore a white pair of trousers, a white pair of shorts in here, linen shorts in here. Last week,
you need the right underpants.
Well, you've nailed it in one. So Brendan pointed out to me that I had red boxers on, and it wasn't a good combination.
Well, that's Stephen. Look, why don't we meet up and get a bit of dress sense going for you?
Yes.
I class myself as a fairly stylish dresser, to be honest with you. So I think me and you could go, as they say in Belfast, we could go shopping someday. But listen,
I need that help. Before I go into this.
That's a genuine offer. That's a genuine offer.
Thank you, Brian.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I'd be nowhere near that man. Imagine meeting up. No way. 030 30 80 55 55. It's the number to call this morning. EasyJet is launching a recruitment drive aimed at people aged over 50. This is interesting. The campaign's called Returnships. Companies offering taster sessions at its London Gatwick Training Centre. EasyJet said it had carried out research which showed that half of over 50s had considered a new career. I've been speaking to the commentator Emma Wolfe, business owner Max Macken. I began by asking Emma, should companies prioritise recruiting over 50s?
Well, look, no one should be banned from doing anything, but I do think this is slightly odd of EasyJet to be targeting the over 50s for a job that's actually, I think, better suited to younger people. I think the whole lifestyle of being, you know, of cabin crew and of travelling a lot and of being in the air, all of that, I think is better suited to people in their 20s and probably 30s. I think the whole kind of the disruption to your lifestyle, the disruption to family life, and it's quite a punishing job. As we get older, reaction times become slower. We're not quite so on the ball. It's brilliant that people over 50 are being encouraged back into the workforce, absolutely. But I'm not sure that this would be the best option for most people over 50.
Max?
I completely disagree. I think it's a fantastic thing. I think also it's not just because people of EasyJet to say that let's do something to over 50s. I think this is a recruitment strategy because the recruitment strategies in the past have probably not been as successful as they wanted them to be. But you've a whole host of people who are over 50, and let's face it, 50 is now the new 40. You know what I mean? 40 is the new 30. So people in their 50s are quite fit, quite agile, quite mobile, quite forward thinking. I mean, if you just look at history, sort of Bram Stoker was over 50 before he wrote all his famous novels of Dracula. Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, was 54, I think, when he set it up. So anybody who's there
was he?
In their 50s, yeah.
I watched anybody? That film on the plane on the way to America. The
Did
man
really?
That founded McDonald's was over 50 when he created it.
52. He was, as you know, if you watched the movie, he was a milkshake salesman.
He was.
Then, and he had the idea.
Didn't
so
he was
you're
in his
50s.
Wow.
You can do anything you want to do. And something like this here, I mean, understand that it's probably quite a different tact and what people needed to do. And you're probably in a comfort zone when you're in your 50s. You're probably looking at kind of your retirement and I'm in a job. It's a safe job and need to move. But anybody who's in the job they're not happy with, fancies doing something like this, seeing a bit of the world, doing a bit of traveling, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I'm all for writers and people founding milkshake companies and McDonald's and all sorts over 50. Absolutely. I'm just saying it's a little bit different. I was chatting to a friend of mine who has been cabin crew. She's been like the purser or whatever, you know, the head for years and years and years. She said, the thing is, in my 20s, she said, I loved it. You know, she was doing transatlantic crossings. She was, you know, going out in the place where they would fly to. They were always going out partying and going out drinking and having a great time traveling the world. She said, as I got into my 40s, A, it was exhausting. B, she had a family. She had a, you know, she had a family life. She had a home life. So I'm just giving that perspective. It is a bit different. You know, if you were in America and you were doing little domestic flights, maybe, or just doing, I don't know, the UK to Europe twice a day or whatever, that might be one thing. But I don't think long-haul travel is ideal. And I know EasyJet is probably shorter flight, but I don't think long-haul travel is ideal if you're over 50. I think it's exhausting. And I also think that you're not as sharp, you're maybe not as good in an emergency over 50 as you might be when you're 25. But there's also the side of experience, and I do think that that is really valuable as well.
Can I jump in? I was on a flight that was an EasyJet flight, actually, and some guy was kicking off with his wife and his family because of where they were sitting, and they were trying to calm him down, and an older stewardess came over, and within like 10 seconds of speaking to him, calmed him completely down. You know, and that was maturity and experience that she brought to that situation. And I also think as well, when you talk about your friend who was doing it for 20 years, if anyone was doing anything for 20 years to make it a bit jaded, but you're talking about people who maybe work in hospitality, people who maybe work in an office job, they're a bit fed up, people whose family have grown up and have moved on, they find themselves at a bit of a loss. I mean, they're not going to recruit only 50-year-olds. They're open to people who are over 50 and older. And again, I think because of the way the generations are going, people are living longer, people are more healthy than they were 30 years ago. I just think it's a great thing, and it would give someone a really good opportunity to experience something that they've probably never even considered.
Yeah, but also, given that we have record numbers of young people not in education, employment or training, why not really, really target younger people and say, look, this is a fantastic job opportunity. It's a great career. You get to travel the world, all of that. I mean, look, we all know what happens to radio presenters who've been doing the job for 20 years, eh, Stephen?
What is that?
But I think they have. I think they have
they
targeted
just,
people.
Just like a fine wine, they just get better and better, uh-huh. don't they?
I think they have targeted people, younger people, and they're not getting the response they want. And this is a new strategy. It's a good strategy. It'll tap into a load of people that no one's really sort of talking to or nobody's really considering. And again, it's not to replace anyone who's younger. It's to add on to the ones on top. So maybe they're advertising the recruitment campaigns have just not worked the successes they wanted, and they want to go down a different stream, which I think is perfectly well.
Can I be politically incorrect?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
As you get older, it's maybe slightly more difficult to be as trim as you once were. Is there going to be an issue with over 50-year-olds with pot bellies trying to squeeze up the aisle?
Because they do have quite strict
requirements. You know that.
Can I say, I think that there would be a requirement for anybody. As you know, flight nights changed massively over the last 30 years. Like before, you'd get a little meal, you get a sweet as you're getting on to help your ears pop. All of that there is gone. The seats are tiny. The walkway up and down between it, you got to go sideways, you need to go to the toilet. So that's always been a pre-requirement. But I was speaking to, when the Belfast Marathon was on, I was speaking to some woman who was running her 12th marathon and she's 67. Do you know what I mean? There's people who, it's not for everyone, but there is people over 50 who could do this job and who could enjoy this job.
I tell you what, I'm not even over 50 and I don't want to stand up for 7 hours walking up and down the aisle in a pair,
isn't it?
In a pair of high heels. I think it's exhausting. I really do. You know, and maybe they get a half an hour off and they're sat in the galley and then someone comes and says, can I have some orange juice for my little one? I think it's a hard job.
It's a really hard job. Like, I often...
And you're away from home a lot, yeah. Overnight, time zones, body clock, all over the place. Honestly, my friend who's done it in America for a long time, she said it's not an easy job. Just
can I take this off the age thing? Just the one final thing that I've thought about a long time, Max. I wanted to bring it up. I keep on forgetting. So I fly a lot and have flown a lot. There was one stage I was flying back to England every week, for goodness sake. I have never seen a female air hostess without makeup. Ever.
Okay.
I wonder...
What was it, their hair?
A lot of makeup.
I wonder, are they allowed not to have makeup? Because I've just never seen a female on a plane.
I don't know, man. But again, so that you get ready
makeup.
For work, aren't you? You're coming in to do your job. So most people who come in to work, I'm not trying to say this is.
I wonder, are they forced to look a certain way? I don't know, I genuinely don't know. But I'm just asking it.
Probably better asking Emma. This is a question directed towards a female.
I don't know if things have changed, but in recent years there was a hullabaloo about this, about the fact that most air hostesses are really attractive. You know, they are. Do you remember in the old days when it was sort of almost they would go up and down the aisles and it was for the businessmen, wasn't it? You know, back in the 1950s, real trolley dollies. Remember when they called them trolley dollies? Yeah, they were sophisticated, they were pretty, and there was an idea that your air hostess always looked gorgeous. In recent years, it may have been relaxed, but there is a real appearance kind of expectation.
Isn't there?
That you will look, yeah, absolutely immaculate, hair, you know, hair neatly up, lots of thick makeup. I mean, I wear that much makeup for TV. It's thick makeup that they wear. Honestly, that is exhausting, looking like that, you know, keeping trim, all of that. So I don't see women, you know, just all natural with their hair down and no makeup on planes. You're right. And I still think there is that expectation.
Yeah, but Stephen, it's not just women these days, is it? There's lots of guys you see when you get on a plane, especially on EasyJet. There's quite a lot of fellas you see on the plane too. So I don't know. It's not for everybody. Not everybody's going to leave your
job. Listen, Brendan in here, who works for me behind the scenes, he's got the eyeliner on and the lipstick every morning.
I don't think the guys on the EasyJet are required to wear that there, but, you know, each to their own, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
Brendan when he's come in from a night out and he hasn't taken off the makeup, probably.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Emma. Thank you, Max.
Thank you.
Something very strange about this program today. We're having too much fun. I wonder why this team is now playing the Dukes of Hazzard when talking about my new white denim jacket, which looks so brilliant on me. Peter and Carrickfergus, why are they playing the Dukes of Hazzard?
Well, I think if you had a cowboy hat on, Stephen, you'd look like Boss Hogg.
A wee
pair of boots, I think you'd really look apart.
But Boss Hogg was short and fat. What could you possibly be saying?
No, I would just say, I'd say he's a bit of a neater figure than you, but you can pass from.
Funny thing about this is there'll be so many of our younger listeners thinking, what is the Dukes of Hazzard?
Well, they'll know what it is. They'll know what it is.
Put that music up for me. I remember this from my youth. Just a good old boy. Oh, I love the Dukes of Hazzard. Never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Joy's calling us from London this morning. Morning, Joy.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Are you going to mock me as well?
No, you have no idea. I enjoyed every millisecond
of that banter between yourself and your previous colleagues. It was so beautiful.
Did you?
It was so natural, down to earth. No armpits, just no flares and airs, but it was just so beautiful. Like,
did we put a wee smile on your face today?
Oh my God, guess what? It was just like listening to a group of best friends discussing, and it reminded me of a phone call that my son had with one of his best friends on the train. I sat there laughing, yeah, just listening to two young men.
It's a pity that slabber Peter there has dropped off. I would tell him what he looked like, boss hog. Right, I'm going to put my Twitter feed, me and my... They've put me on a hat now as well. Thank you, Joy. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a lovely day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone, for this week. As usual, we do the news, we do the big serious stories, but we also have a laugh together because I think we've been together for 20-odd years now. So thank you very much for another week. I'll see you on 5 Live tonight if you want to join us across the UK for the Lowland shows Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. We'll see you back here, Radio Ulster, Monday morning. Bye-bye, everyone, and thank you.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.